This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Thursday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. And our next guest is somebody I've been looking forward to having on the show for months now. I've been following the trajectory of the building and the writing and the publishing of this book called Three Ring Circus, about the Shaq and Kobe Lakers from 96 through 04. Their build up to that three in a row championship dynasty to their inevitable breakup. And the author of it has done so many other great books. He's one of the most prolific sports writers that we have today. Last time we had him on was for the USFL book, Football for a Buck, which was just a fascinating and fantastic read. He's done books about the Mets, the 86 Mets, The Bad Guys Won, Sweetness about Walter Payton, Brett Favre, and so many other fantastic and interesting, insightful looks inside our sports history. And this one just proves to be unbelievable as well. Joining us here on the show is Jeff Perlman. Jeff, good morning. How you doing, bud?
That was a great introduction. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You got it. You got it. My pleasure to have you here on the show. And reading through this book, it made me wonder. There are so many anecdotes in there about how difficult it was to play with Kobe, to manage Kobe, to coach Kobe. And you are writing this while he passes away tragically and all these wonderful things are being said about Kobe. Was it awkward for you to be writing about some of his darker moments as you heard everybody talk about all of his wonderful accomplishments?
Right. So basically, the book, I finished the book before he died. So the book was wrapped before January, and it was going through editing. And when I found out he died, so I live in Southern California, but I'm from New York. And when I found out he died, it's going to sound dumb, right? But I don't think I realized the complete depth of love for him out there, out here, in a iconic way. You know, like, I grew up in New York with Patrick Ewing, just as an example. And New Yorkers loved Patrick Ewing. He was great. But it wasn't like that. And you come out here and you realize the intensity, and it was all about the appreciation for the work ethic and the doggedness. And Kobe taught me this, and Kobe taught me that. And I learned by watching him that you can have a dream. And it blew me away. And so it didn't affect me when I was writing it because the book was done. But it affected me when I thought about doing stuff like this, to be honest, and promoting it. Because The period I'm writing about, 96 to 04, was kind of a mixed bag for him. And he was young and he was immature and he could be difficult. And there's also Eagle, Colorado and everything that happened there. So it's more this almost need to remind people that the Kobe in this book is a sliver in time in the course of development and not the guy who died at 41 as the dad of four as a youth basketball coach. And it's a really, really weird line to walk, to be honest with you. It is not the most comfortable line to walk.
Yeah, I could understand that because there are anecdotes in this about just how difficult Kobe was and how he was not beloved by everybody. And the book opens up with this amazing anecdote about Samaki Walker, where essentially, you know, Samaki owed him money and he didn't pay him. And Kobe eventually punched him in the eye. And this was a no-no. And basically the team bus said, okay, Samaki, you want to fight Kobe? We're going to pull off on the side of the road and you guys go ahead and do it. And this is the entire Laker bus saying, including Shaq, yep, Kobe deserves to get his ass kicked right now. And even Phil says that. Now, this is not the Kobe that we're talking about in passing, but it sheds a little bit of light on how uncomfortable sometimes the relationship was between Kobe and his teammates, right?
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting. So Samaki told me that story, and Samaki Walker's a great guy, like a great guy. And he was just telling it more as an example of sort of the awkwardness and the discomfort of Kobe. And it's really the story of a kid who grew up in Italy, you know, one of probably three black faces he ever saw in his youth, then moves to suburbia, again, sort of a fish out of water, never really sort of developing this social awareness that, you know, he actually really struggled with. And the thing that was interesting about that fight, number one, Samaki Walker, you know, stop the bus, Phil, stop the bus. And Phil Jackson has the bus stop. So they're in the middle of Cleveland, and Phil Jackson is going to allow Samaki Walker to challenge Kobe Bryant to get off the bus and get in a fight with a 6'9" guy who probably would have beaten him down pretty good. Kobe Bryant refuses to get off the bus. And then later, Samaki Walker gets to his hotel room in Cleveland, and there's a message from Kobe Bryant sobbing apologetically. And, you know, later Samaki, he wasn't telling that story to mock Kobe Bryant. He was telling it to sort of explain that here's this guy who looked really confident, who was super confident on the court, but really had these struggles inside to sort of present this thing. Look, I'm tough guy Kobe. You want to mess with me? When in fact, there really was a lot of like doubt and insecurity that came with it.
Author Jeff Perlman joins us. His book, Three Ring Circus, delves into the Shaq and Kobe years. And here's why I think your works and your books are so important. As time goes on in sports, we tend to gloss over the difficulty in the middle of it, and we just kind of look back fondly, nostalgically. And the Shaq and Kobe years are now this kind of cute Batman and Robin. Yeah, they were at each other's throats at times, but they won three championships, and now they kind of kissed and have made up. Of course, Kobe's no longer with us, but before he passed away, they seem to have patched it up. Your work here really delves into the reality of the situation. And Olden Polonies has an unbelievable quote in this book. And he says, it never works when you have two alpha males, even when it does. It doesn't ever work even when it does. What did he mean by that?
Well, he meant they won three championships back to back to back together. So you can say on the court, they won. So it worked. And it's always funny when people say to me, why didn't it work better? Like, well, why didn't they win more? And I'm always like, you won back-to-back-to-back championships. It's pretty freaking good. But, you know, they just, Olden Polonies was witness to this fight they had. They actually got into a really epic kind of brawl playing pickup basketball during the strike lockout, and where Kobe gets mad at Shaq for calling too many fouls in pickup, and Shaq basically smacks him across the face and threatens to have him traded to Vancouver, and they go back and forth, and it's one of those things. Like, here's what I always find interesting. Maybe you agree with me. I don't actually know. Like, you know the play, the famous Shaq Kobe play, like the definitive Shaq Kobe play is the alley-oop against, you know, when he throws it against Portland and Shaq slams the ball and goes right. And it's the play. It's the vintage play of Shaq Kobe. And people say, this tells you everything you need to know. The funny thing is, it really doesn't. The thing that makes that play so unique is it never really happened. Like, it's so rare that Kobe's driving down the lane and passed to Shaq. I gave him an alley-oop. 99% of the time, he's shooting that ball. And then in the huddle, Shaq is saying, why the F didn't you pass me the ball? Oh, go after yourself. Why aren't you thinking getting open?
Kawhi, blah, blah, blah. Well, freaking rebound a little bit, and maybe I, you know, you get the ball. Like, that's what really happened all the time. And it worked because it was so much more talented than everyone else. And they had these great role players, and they had this coach, this legendary coach. But it's not like they were made to play with each other. They were just uber talented, and it worked out.
Exactly right. What Olden Polonese there is saying is that we were so talented, we were so great, of course it succeeded, but internally it couldn't succeed forever because it was like a train going off the rails. And we look at Shaq today in those Turner Studios, and he's pitching all types of soft drinks and sneakers and insurance companies with cartoon generals. And we look at him as this kind of soft and loving, you know, happy-go-lucky big man. But in his prime, in that locker room, he was difficult. There were teammates that called him cruel, called him surly. I mean, former PR guy saying it was tough to work with him. What was the real Shaq when he was in his mid to late 20s in L.A.?
Actually, I would argue there were definitely, he had his moments. There's definitely no doubt he had his moments. On the flip side, you know, like a bunch of guys said, the best teammate I've ever played with, the best superstar you've ever played with. The thing about Shaq as a Laker that I found just fascinating, it's almost like with Kobe. He just wanted you to kind of love him and defer to him. Like, he desperately wanted to be Batman to Kobe's Robin, and he wanted this thing where I'm the big brother and you're the little brother. And the stories of his generosity, I wrote an essay for someone today. He might be the best teammate ever to the little guy. Like, he used to have a guard, I don't really remember him. His name is Mike Pemberthy out of Masters College. He's now the shooting coach for the New Orleans Pelicans. And Mike told me, Mike shows up for his first game with the Lakers, and everyone else is wearing these, you know, super fancy suits, and he's wearing a jacket he bought the day before from Banana Republic. And Shaq goes up to him quietly and says, "Yo, Mike, do you want a suit?" And he's like, "Nah, I don't, man." And Shaq goes, come back tomorrow. And he meets him tomorrow, and Shaq has his personal trailer there, and he gets Mike Pemberthy six suits. Mark Madsen told the story, great stories about Mark Madsen comes out of Stanford, Mormon, recently went on a Mormon mission to Spain, very devout, very pious. And, you know, I wrote a book about the Lakers when A.C. Green showed up, and he was the world's most famous virgin, and the Lakers in the 80s made his life miserable and mocked him relentlessly. Mark Madsen shows up on flight. Shaq starts asking the flight attendants, "Hey, any chance you're Mormon?" Mark Madsen shows up at the Staples Center one day, and a woman's standing there, and she's like, "So last night Shaq was in a restaurant I was in, and he was going around asking women if they were Mormon because they had someone he wants you to set up with." Like, he would fly in. He flew in. There was a player named Joe Crispin out of Penn State. For his first game, he flew in Joe Crispin's parents and flew him in first class. After Crispin kept saying, "No, it's okay, it's okay," he offered to pay for the funerals of parents' teammates when they died. Like, yeah, he could be surly and he could be awkward. And with Shaq, I mean, with Kobe, there was definitely friction that he was also excited for. But the generosity, I don't think there's ever been a more generous teammate on the flip side than Shaq. I really don't.
That's fascinating. Jeff Perlman joins us, the author of Three Ring Circus. One of my favorite parts of the book is the pre-Shaq and Kobe years, which just delve into the dysfunction of Magic Johnson's return and Magic trying to coach the Lakers, and the Cedric Ceballos, Nick Van Exel years, which is just amazing. And that includes Nick Van Exel, which I had always thought that might have happened, might not have happened, saying infamously when they were down 3-0 to the Utah Jazz, 1-2-3 Cancun as they break the huddle. I didn't know if that was real. But you retell the story, and it seems like even Van Exel admits that he said it, but it was in joking. So that definitely happened, huh?
No, 100%. That's, in a way, that's my favorite period of the team. You got Cedric Ceballos, who nicknames himself Scheiss for short for franchise, because he's the franchise. You have a young Eddie Jones. You have Magic coming back, and it's just a disaster because he just doesn't fit in. And Van Exel. So Van Exel, the year before, had gone on vacation with a Laker teammate named Corey Blount, who he used to play with in Cincinnati. And they went to Cancun the year before. So now they're about to lose to Utah, and it's in a practice, and they're down 3-0. I think they're down 3-0. 1-2-3, Cancun. And if you talk about a misreading of the room, there's your moment. Like, Shaq actually went up to Jerry West and told him what happened. And Jerry West said he will not play for this team next year. And Van Exel swears it was all in jest. And he's playing. Nick Van Exel is now an NBA assistant coach and a really good one. And he acknowledges kind of what a buffoon he could be at times. So there was a lesson learned there, but it definitely happened.
Imagine being down 3-0 in an NBA series and chanting in practice, 1-2-3, Cancun! before you go back out on the floor. It's amazing. You know, you detail all of these moments, these ups and downs, the undulations of the Shaq and Kobe dynamic. Ultimately, it breaks up after they lose to the Detroit Pistons in 04. Do you think if they beat the Pistons in 04, that there's a way to keep those guys together?
No. 0%. I mean, basically, Jerry Buss really had to make a business decision. Shaq, Kobe had made it clear, very clear to a lot of people, that he was going to the Clippers. And that was a belief. He's going to the Clippers. If we don't take desperate action here, he's going to play for the other LA team in our building, which would have been a disaster for the Lakers, obviously. After they lost to Detroit in game five of that series, the Lakers held a little sort of shindig just to mark the end of the season at a hotel in Detroit that night. And I talked to a former player named Kareem Rush, really nice guy. And he said, Kobe walks in, walks up to Kareem Rush and says to him very bluntly, "I'm never playing with that MF-er again." And he was talking about Shaq. And then later, Jerry Buss, the owner of the Lakers, walks into this party and Shaq is there with his wife and Kobe is there. And Jerry Buss walks right past Shaq and talks only to Kobe. And Shaq said he kind of knew at that moment that his time was done. They were just, if you think about that season, it was the Malone Payton edition, and they had Kobe flying in and out of Eagle, Colorado, Shaq demanding a contract extension and being ignored, Phil Jackson not knowing what was going to happen to him, Kobe 1 foot out the door, actually telling Mike Dunleavy, the Clippers coach at one point, "Get me out of here." Like, it just wasn't, it was done. It was, when people say, how many titles could they have won? I would say three. Like, what they got is what they got, and it wasn't going to go anymore.
The book is Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty. One anecdote that I had no idea about that you detailed in this was that once Phil Jackson leaves after that all kind of breaks up, Pat Riley reached out to the Lakers to try to get the job. Of course, he was the Showtime Lakers coach throughout the 80s. At that point, he is in Miami. Funny how things come around, because he eventually trades for Shaq when he's in Miami. But were you surprised to learn that Pat was trying to get back into the Lakers?
I was. I had heard sort of rumors out of them that I knew it was real. And the funny thing is, it ended with the Shaq trade. You know, there were these sort of pinings to return to L.A., pinings to sort of, you know, work with that group. I do think a Riley, if it happened earlier, a Riley coaching Shaq and Kobe situation is a really interesting one and a really intriguing one, because they had tired of the triangle offense. It was definitely breaking down. But then as soon as the Miami trade was made, as soon as Shaq went to Miami, all talk of that was dead, and he ended up hiring Rudy Tomjanovich.
I did not realize how boring Del Harris was in meetings until I read your book.
He's so sad. He's the nicest man. And he gave me 6 hours of interview time in Dallas. I'm not kidding. I swear to God, he's one of the smartest basketball men ever. He's one of the nicest people ever. He was a really good coach. Players swear by him. But his sort of, you know, the end of him was he would talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And guys like Nick, it was the wrong generation of players. You know, it wasn't Sidney Moncrief and Jack Sikma anymore. It was Shaq and Kobe and Nick Van Exel. And they just sitting there and listening to these lectures just killed those guys. And he was a good coach. He had a good run in L.A., but it just, they needed a change. It was just too much.
If you want a book that you can just rip through this fall, this is it. I mean, it's 400 and some odd pages. I just devoured it. Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty. It is so good if you're a basketball fan. The author, Jeff Perlman, joining us on the show. Jeff, I am admiring, once again, a wonderful work that you did. Great job on this book, and thanks so much for carving out time for us, buddy.
My dad always says, just tell people it's not about politics, and they'll probably buy it. So.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, take care. Thank you.
See ya. Jeff Perlman joining us. Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty. It is so good. And what he said about the passing of Kobe is so interesting. He had written the book, and a lot of this book is about how difficult Kobe was. And these are early years of his career. This is he's trying to establish his stardom, establish his star in the NBA. He's trying to take a lot of tips from Michael, and he's battling Shaq, and he wants to be great, and he's a little bit aloof. Well, he's very aloof, and he's difficult to deal with. And Jeff details all of this. And then Kobe passes away, and it might feel like it's blasphemous to have this written, but it's the truth. It's what Kobe was going through at that time. And I don't think we have a definitive book on the Shaq and Kobe difficulty. I think we've talked about it, but we don't know the details internally. This book does it. And I found that part to be the most fascinating because we know of it. We don't know the specifics of it. And now it's kind of been glossed over. But man, they were at each other's throats for that entire time. And this book goes into it. What a great book. When we come back here on the show, we are stunned to a news that includes stealing cat blood. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's new on CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
So glad you're with us on a fine Thursday around here, everybody. DA, CBS Sports Radio, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, each and every morning. And we thank you for being part of the show. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit? Car, motorcycle, and RV policies, that's on top of what GEICO could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit GEICO.com for more. Boy, we have had a wonderful show today. Jeff Perlman was just awesome. And Miraz Bogish and I getting into a free-for-all over Celtics and Brooklyn Nets for next year, their championship odds, was a real fun one as well. Ridgely tweets, the Brooklyn lineup is an example of trading a paperclip for a car. For example, they got Thaddeus Young for Kevin Garnett, who got traded for Caris LeVert. The current Boston strength is largely formed from that trade. Bogish can't say it's negligible because of how long ago it transpired. Meantime, others are weighing in. Robin Topeka, that was awesome. I was about to pop my second bag of popcorn. All three of you guys stating facts and hot sports takes. That's what the morning show needs. Keep your caffeine. Just tune into the DA Show. That'll get your blood flowing. Unfortunately, as Jeffrey writes, great show, informative and entertaining. Bogish is now on strike. A little bit like Miraz earlier in the year, Bogish says, I'm not doing headlines until Brad Stevens gets issued an apology, which is devastating for the show because he's one of the best update anchors in the business. But we don't have him anymore because neither Miraz nor I is going to apologize to Brad Stevens. So I don't know where we go from here. Maybe justice done to a news, Bogues?
Well, Pete Bilotti has apologized in my ear to Brad Stevens. That's good enough for me, okay. DA, so I can do full
sorry, Brad.
For you. Yeah.
Sure, now you fold easy.
All right, so what do we got this morning?
It's all sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Those Boston Celtics shot better overall, better from three, but lost game four of the Heat last night, 112-109. Boston's 19 turnovers became 17 Miami points. The Heat were plus seven at the free throw line, and the Celtics started poorly, according to Jaylen Brown.
I think we just came out flat, and we just got to be better next game. It's not over. It could be done. You know, we got a lot of heart in this locker room.
The Celtics were eventually down 12 in the third, but had a brief one-point lead in the fourth. Then a final Miami push led by Tyler Hero, the rookie, scoring 37 points, 14 of 21 from the floor. The Miami franchise has never blown a 3-1 series lead. They get their first chance to close out the Celtics tomorrow night. The Lakers go for a 3-1 lead on the Nuggets tonight at 9 Eastern. Thursday Night Football takes Miami to Jacksonville. That's an 8:20 Eastern kickoff. Here is an odd nugget ahead of this one. Ryan Fitzpatrick has won his last four starts against the Jaguars. They have all come, though, with different teams. The Jets,
wow.
Texans, Titans, and
oh,
Bills.
My God. How long has Ryan Fitzpatrick been bouncing around this league that he's beaten the Jaguars four straight times with four different teams?
Who remembered he was a Titan, too?
Or a Texan.
Right, that's a good one, too. Right.
The Niners are still sorting out all their injury issues before Sunday's game at the Giants. After some initial optimism about Jimmy G's high ankle sprain, Kyle Shanahan ready to start Nick Mullins.
I'll be surprised if Jimmy gets back later in the week. I know he's still pulling to do it. But, yeah, Nick's ready to go. And if something happens to Nick, CJ will be ready to go. Nick's got a lot of playing time with us in 2018. Prepared him for moments like this. He always does a good job in practice. And excited to see him get his opportunity.
I believe that was a quick CJ Beathard reference. Running back Tevin Coleman now expected to miss a month with a sprained knee, but the Niners did have tight end George Kittle back at practice yesterday. He has his own knee injury. A Chargers doctor accidentally punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung, giving him a pain injection before Sunday's game. Taylor remains out, so rookie Justin Herbert starts against Carolina.
Oh, interesting. If so that's official now. They're not going to let Tyrod play on Sunday.
They said yesterday that Justin was going to start. So, yeah, that's pretty much locked in. How long Taylor's out is the question. I guess some doctors recommend a month of doing nothing strenuous, but who knows if that actually would apply to him in this situation.
Could you imagine if the doctors accidentally punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung? He's forced to sit out a month, and by the time that unfolds, the Chargers are like, you know what, there's no real reason to go back from Justin Herbert, so that's how Tyrod Taylor loses his job permanently. We did some of the research during the show that when Mo Lewis hit Drew Bledsoe, it was internal bleeding, which took him out for a couple of weeks, and then that allowed the door to open for Tom Brady. Ultimately, Bledsoe, of course, lost the job permanently. But this would be a little bit of the same thing, but it didn't even happen on the field. The doctors did it to him.
By accident. And it was sweet of Anthony Lynn to say yesterday, Tyrod's not angry. Well, I'd be a little angry.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that'd be an okay emotion.
Imagine? Wow.
Steve Cohen is not technically owner of the Mets just yet, but he has made his first significant hire. Sandy Alderson will be the team's president, overseeing baseball and business operations. He was their GM from 2010 through 18. Cohen still needs approval from the other owners. That comes late October, early November. Now, that's not necessarily in doubt getting that approval, but apparently hiring someone like Alderson may be helpful to the cause, since some owners are afraid of Cohen spending ridiculous amounts of money. So they think that maybe Alderson will slow that down just a little bit. That makes Cohen a little more palatable to them when they actually have to vote for him in a couple of weeks from now.
Look, there is nothing like being a Mets fan, waking up and going, wow, people are worried we're going to spend too much money? What kind of alternate universe is that? You got to guard against them spending too much? I mean, it's just a weird thing. But I could see that. Look, the numbers are really crazy that Steve Cohen is worth $14 billion. The next richest owner in baseball is Ted Lerner of Washington, at $4 billion. So he is worth $10 billion, about three times what the next richest owner is. The worth of Steve Cohen individually is what the top three richest owners are worth in baseball. So them being scared that he would just spend, because there is no salary cap, there's just a luxury tax. Yeah, I would probably be worried too if I was the rest of the league. And this does sound like a very strategic move by Cohen.
I think another comparison I saw, DA, was he's worth more than the Steinbrenners plus Dolan plus the Maras plus Woody Johnson's family.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, he's right. Than the rest of the New York hierarchy. He's got all more money than all of those guys put together.
Yeah, there is a precursor on this. A precedent is what happens in English Premier League soccer and international soccer, where you have people that are just worth, like, I mean, more money than you could even really count. So it's billions upon billions upon billions. And they just go, well, what do we have to spend to buy Leo Messi? What do we have to spend to buy David Beckham? What do we spend to buy, you know, insert star here? We're just going to do that because there's no salary cap and there's not a price that we would pay that would affect us on a daily basis. So just spend it. And Steve Cohen has that money.
And I think what really scares the owners is the financial uncertainty of baseball coming out of this pandemic is that's not going to affect Steve Cohen at all. All right. Of these owners coming up with whatever free agents, you know, the song and dance has been with the free agents in Major League Baseball the last couple of years. Hold out. We're going to get all the power back. And he's going to blow the cover off that. So if you're an MLB free agent, you're Scott Boras and you're whoever, I mean, the Mets are going to be sitting there waiting in the arms of any big free agent that becomes available and maybe the only team willing to spend what they would normally make on the open market, which is just the timing for Steve Cohen. He could clean up here, completely change the Mets with the snap of a finger.
Great point. And for Steve Cohen, again, there's no price that would be prohibitive for him to spend. He's just worth too much money. So also, he's going to own SNY, the television network. So whatever he invests in the team, he could get back in advertising revenue if the team is interesting and winning. So what any agent could say is, okay, we're just going to let you know what our best offer is in the open market, and then we're going to come back to you, and you just top it. And Steve Cohen could say that. Yep, just let me know what the biggest price is that you get in the market. Just come back to me, and I'm just going to pay more than that.
No doubt.
In the meantime, his Mets or his future Mets watched the Rays win in Queens last night, 8-5, clinching the AL East. The Mets, meanwhile, now 3.5 games out of a wild card spot with 4 to go. Atop the AL Central, the Twins now a half-game lead on the White Sox. Minnesota outscored Detroit 7-6, while Chicago was losing its fourth in a row, 3-2 in Cleveland, on a Jordan Luplo game-ending solo homer. And the Padres may have an issue on the eve of their return to the playoffs. Ace Mike Clevinger left yesterday afternoon star after one inning with biceps tightness.
Wow.
His manager, a real adult, Jace Tingler.
He was feeling good. He got through the first and, you know, came in and said, you know, just tightened up on him after, I think it was the second hitter. You know, obviously that was it. We sent him in, and trainers took him in to get an MRI, and we're still waiting for the results right now. So that's really all we have right now.
Clevinger didn't start Saturday because of this issue. No update on him since Tingler's
No offense
comments.
To Mike Clevinger, but do you think Bob Gibson ever took himself out of a game because he had bicep tightness? I mean, it's like, this is where we are now with Major League Baseball pitchers. Oh, little tinge in the bicep. It doesn't feel that great. You know what? We should definitely get an MRI, guys. I don't think I can do this anymore.
The Dallas Stars may need to Tampa expectations nice. In the Stanley Cup final.
All right.
Now down 2-1 after last night's 5-2 loss. The Lightning got a goal from captain Steven Stamkos, who hadn't played since late February. Stamkos, though, didn't play after the first period last night. His status for the rest of the series is in doubt. MLS last night, Columbus beat Minnesota 2-1. That's a 6-match unbeaten streak now for the league-leading Crew. And now, without further delay, why don't we get stuck?
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
I'm laughing at Cap's graphic on the screen right now. If you're watching it, watchda.com, inside the radio.com app, or on Twitch. There is just a yelping cat.
Well, we say good morning, Florida man, I guess in honor of Thursday Night Football being an all-Florida affair. This Florida man is accused of stealing something I didn't think a person from any state would want to steal. Mm-hmm. At first, he was seen on security footage at a vet clinic inspecting one of those like metal boxes you see outside the doctor's office that they put like the test, blood test and blood vials and other stuff in for
the
testing.
Biohazard container.
Well, not the used needles, the stuff that they put your samples in that then the lab comes and takes to go do tests on. About 20 minutes later, a truck pulls up, a guy gets out wearing the same clothes as the dude who was inspecting the box, takes the box, and drives off. Inside the box, vials of cat blood. I don't want to know why anyone's stealing cat blood. I mean, it just, no thanks on the follow-up to this story. I don't know what he wants to do with it, but this guy took it, and hopefully he's going to enjoy it and quiet and leave me alone.
A couple of questions.
Stories?
Here.
You have cat blood stories?
This is the ultimate caper. So this guy dressed up like the truck delivery guy, stole the truck. Like, did he somehow knock out the normal driver of it? I mean, how did he get behind the wheel of the truck?
No, it was his truck. He was just, I guess, what they couldn't confirm was his face the second time around. So the first time they could see it was him. The second time they could just only match his clothes. He took the box and got back in presumably his truck and left. I don't think there was a double thievery here. He just cased the joint and then went back and got his cat blood.
Okay, so this is not the normal driver or delivery guy of the cat vials. This is just a rando. This is a rando that came up on the vet clinic, was poking around, saw the box of cat blood, and was like, oh, I want this box of cat blood. I'm throwing it in the back of my truck.
Exactly.
Number two, they haven't found out who did this yet. They just have the security footage, but they have not been able to identify who did this.
No, they want your help. If you live in the area, they want your help. If now, you've seen this man before, or there's a guy with cat blood running down his face, you should call authorities quickly. In this part
I was going to say, I mean, I think if you live close to a guy that steals cat blood, you would probably know it. Like, right now, if I offered, okay, who in your neighborhood steals cat blood? Everybody would have number David. One right off the top of your head. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's Bill at 106. That's definitely, I know that guy.
It's got to be DA. He stored crabs in his laundry room for 24 hours. Of course he would steal cat blood.
And do we know the town that this was in Florida?
So I don't know how to say it this way. Is it St. Augustine or St. Augustine? I can never know about, I never remember in Florida.
St. Augustine. Yeah, there that's up near Jacksonville, I believe, right?
Yeah, yes. I have relatives in St. Augustine. I mean, if they ask him, be on the lookout.
That sounds like a Mraz.
Now, I do have to play alternate theory here. What if this guy is sort of like Denzel Washington in the movie John Q? What if he has a very anemic cat at home and nobody will treat him and he's out of bills, so he's doing all he can to save his cat's life? Is he not then a hero?
No, yeah, he would be the Robin Hood of cat blood.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what it's taken, he's saving a cat's life, his own cat's life, and this is the only way he could go about it. To be frank, I don't think he should be making fun of the guy. I think that's celebratory. That is a guy doing all he can to save the life of another.
Well, let's play this out. I like this role play here. If Eli needed a blood transfusion, but you could not afford it, would you go and steal pomadoodle blood?
It's a pomsky. It's not a pomadoodle. And I will tell you.
But could you use pomodoro blood? Are they close enough?
I don't even know if there is a pomodoro.
No.
I would do anything
One's type PD, one's type PM.
That dog is my son, and I would do anything I could to save him. I raced just a few weeks ago after he inhaled the chocolate muffin to the vet to make sure his stomach got pumped.
Oh, really?
So I would do anything for Eli, anything. And if that meant stealing Pomsky blood because he needed a blood transfusion that nobody else would do and I had to perform it myself, yes, I would do it. Yes, I would.
You would do anything for him except stop littering your floor with dangerous chocolate. It's everywhere. It's a landmine for the dog, but I'll do anything for him.
He went into a pocketbook. It was different.
How did that go, getting his stomach pumped from the chocolate chip muffin?
It was petrified because you can't even go into the vet's clinics right now. You have to wait in your car and they take you out and you sign in. So the whole time I was sitting there going, I hope something doesn't go wrong. I hope they don't slip up. Will I ever see Eli again? I was panicked for about an hour and a half. And they don't give you any updates. You're not in a waiting room where you can ask. And then finally they brought him out all happy and he gave me a lick on the face and we got McDonald's on the way home.
Did he eat the McDonald's?
He had a couple nuggets, of course. I was going to treat
nice,
him.
Nice, which I think is very healthy for a little while.
His stomach was pumped. He had nothing stomach. Left in it. He had nothing left. I had to give him a little something.
Forget dog food or some type of.
He deserved a treat.
Let's give him deep fried chicken processed parts.
It was two. It was two nuggets. I had the other eight.
By the way, did he need his stomach pumped or was this an overreaction by you? You staying in that. Staying in that car was probably feeling like, I hope they don't tie Rod Taylor.
You know, exactly. Exactly. No, but yeah, it was one of these. It was Danielle's cousin. It was a monstrous muffin. I mean, it was a muffin that looked like an asteroid, and it was double chocolate. She couldn't have gone with the blueberry that day. So, and dogs, as you know, can't have chocolate. So, of course I was fearful. So the point is, I would do anything I could to save Eli. And if this is what this cat owner's doing, then this is what you have to do. He's John Q. I'm in it.
I can't hate your theory on that because I would do anything for Rosie the cat as well. If that meant. If I had to steal vials of cat blood from St. Augustine Veterinarian Clinic, I would have to do it. I'd have to save Rosie the cat.
There is stunning news. DA hated pets, hated the idea of having a pet. Quote, I would do anything I could to save Rosie the cat.
You got
it. He wants more wiffle ball catches now. He can't get enough.
Well, I need an entire team now because I can't keep. I can't keep throwing it to Rosie, and then she swings and misses. I got to go catch it and then bring it back and then throw it. I need a catcher.
What a turn. DA and Rosie, like peanut butter and jelly.
When we come back here on the show, we've got your epic fail. I assume this is us at each other's throats over Brad Stevens, the Boston Celtics, and the Brooklyn Nets.
Yes, you lose. Good day, sir.
Okay. Check it out. It's next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
After the Celtics fall behind 3-1 of the Eastern Conference Finals, we asked you guys today, is Brad Stevens part of the Celtics' problems? 62% said no. A defensive de-alliance today of Brad Stevens. 38% said yes. Brad's 318 wins are the fourth most by any Celtics head coach. Red Auerbach is number one. Tommy Heinsohn number two. Doc Rivers number three. Interesting. I don't think any of those guys won the titles of the Larry Bird era. Was it Bill Fitch in 81? Casey Jones in 84 and 86? Meaning that the three titles that the Lakers won in the 80s with Bird, none of those coaches are in the top four of wins. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. Myself, Mraz, and Andrew Bogish fighting over the Celtics falling behind 3-1 of this series. Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Mraz is shaking his head.
I mean, just now I know what Katie Bogus is getting Andrew for Christmas. A lot of green underpants, because I didn't know he was such a Celtics on it. Who knew?
No. I'm not. Listen.
It's almost like you're Sean Bradley, and Kaplan was one of the Monstars, and he's taking your body and your talents, and he's talking as Mr. Celtics mouthpiece through you right now.
But
wrong, sir. Wrong.
Again, but here's the problem, right? Again, yes, and I do like Brad Stevens, but you're talking about him as if this team hasn't made the playoffs. They're right now in the Eastern Conference
Finals. So that's what we play for. The great Boston Celtics play for only the playoffs.
Et cetera, et cetera.
You're talking about 2-3 years down the road. If they go a decade after that trade and have no hardware to show for it, it's an unmitigated disaster if the Nets are having freaking parades down Flatbush Avenue after they made that trade. It's a disaster. It's an undefendable disaster. And Brad Stevens is the damn face of it. That's it. It's end of it, period. End of story. End of discussion. You're wrong. You lose. Good day, sir.
You lose. Good day, sir.
It's a disaster no matter what happens to the Nets. That's my point. It doesn't make it to me. It doesn't make it worse. Now, the one thing...
It doesn't have to make it worse. It's bad. They did nothing. They have done nothing but come up short in Eastern Conference Finals since that trade. And the team that was left with nothing attracted two free agents and are about to be the favorite to go to an NBA Finals. If, like I said at the beginning, it is on the table that the Nets win a championship before the Celtics did after that trade, that makes it more of a disaster. I don't know how that's arguable.
Under Section 37B of the contract signed by him...
Also, I would argue this, that the Brooklyn Nets, since that trade, have developed lesser talent better than the Celtics have developed top talent. I mean, what they've done with Spencer
the
Dinwiddie...
The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Final.
Well, Bogues.
See, here's my...
Bogues.
Don't say it again. I'm hanging up on you. Don't say it again.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Good old-fashioned throwdown here on the DA show. That was a lot of fun. This might be the inopportune time to read this tweet, but Randy tweets and just wanted to express concerning your show yesterday. I like to block out negativity as well. The reason why your show is my favorite is the fact that you improve my mental health by making me laugh and smile. I listen to you guys almost every show since the overnights. So I don't know if us yelling at one another... was the best example of blocking out negativity or making you laugh and smile, but maybe you enjoyed us fighting with one another. I was thinking about this when we had Jeff Perlman here on the show. I was talking about this Lakers book, Mraz, that I just ripped through. I know you don't read books, but doesn't this sound like the type of book that even you would read?
Yes. Yes, yes. I love deep dives of my, I would say, early teenage era of sports, which that Lakers three-peat was so much a part of, would absolutely be right in my wheelhouse to go behind the scenes of. Absolutely. That is a wheelhouse book for me.
And I'm always kind of searching for ways. You know, I'm like... Phil Jackson handing Cedric Ceballos some type of book on a trip to Montana. Like, just please, can you read something? Right. I feel like I need to do that with you. Just find anything that you might read So maybe I'll get you this book, because I think this could be one of the rare things that have the written word on it that that's not like Monday Morning Quarterback by Peter King that you would actually read.
Hey, if it's that or Goosebumps, you know I'm in. So just, you know, please find it my way.
Okay. That'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. And thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA on the simulcast. Tomorrow's a Target Demo Friday and Cranky Dan Shaughnessy on the Celtics. That's going to be a lot of fun. Be good. The Mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.